Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay on Friday, November the 22nd. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. And our top story today is that a drug dealer who made tens of thousands of pounds selling narcotics online from a bedroom at his dad's home in Whitstable has been jailed. Well, Kate joins me on the podcast with the full details on this story. So, Kate, who was the so-called mastermind behind this?
Well, his name is Felix Boo, and a court was told how he managed to get hold of Class A and B drugs from as far away as America before selling them via a social media platform called Telegram. And in a bid to get away with it, the 21-year-old invested in digital currency and made large deposits into Monzo and Lloyd's bank accounts to hide the cash.
And how was he caught?
In May 2022, Border Force intercepted a parcel containing cannabis that was heading to his address in Clifton Road. Police then searched the property and found £25,000 worth of cannabis, cocaine and ketamine, along with £42,000 in cash. They also seized Rolex watches, including a Sky Dweller and GMT Master 2, which sell for around £10,000 each.
Was anything else revealed in court, Kate?
It emerged Boo had finished school shortly before the pandemic and became socially isolated in his bedroom during the lockdowns. During mitigation, the court was told his immaturity and naivety saw him become a one-man band dealing directly to users. He admitted possession with intent to supply and importing cannabis and concealing criminal property, namely money. He's been locked up for 3 years.
Kate, thank you ever so much.
Kent Online News.
The Foreign Office say they're supporting the family of a woman from Orpington who's died from suspected methanol poisoning in Laos. 28-year-old lawyer Simone White, who went to Wilmington Grammar School for Girls in Dartford, is thought to have fallen ill after drinking free shots at a local bar. Six people have died and others are in hospital. The M2 has reopened nearly 24 hours after the death of a pedestrian in his 50s. Several vehicles were involved in a collision on the coastbound stretch between Sittingbourne and Faversham on Wednesday night. The motorway was closed until yesterday evening for investigation work. Police are keen to speak to witnesses or anyone with dashcam footage. A man who's thought to have helped asylum seekers cross the Channel in small boats has been extradited to the UK after fleeing to Spain. The 46-year-old from Nottingham is accused of buying equipment and sourcing people to organise journeys. He's been remanded in custody ahead of a court appearance in January. Now, next today, and a Maidstone man says he's having to go to A&E several times a week after falling onto a rusty piece of metal in his garden. Sounds really painful. Well, Matthew Charles says he's tried to get the wound redressed at his GP surgery, but has been told they can't see him. He's praised Maidstone Hospital for the care he's received, but says it's a ridiculous situation.
I've got a bad injury to my arm. I suffered this over a month ago. I was advised strongly to have a bandage change and to have it repacked every other day to stop infection and possible sepsis. I contacted my GP practice. They were unable to give me an appointment for 5 to 6 weeks. I tried 3 or 4 times to contact them to see if I could get a different response and didn't get any. I was told to go to A&E. They have been fantastic with their care, but you can see why A&E is clogged up, because if you can't get in your GP practice, you just get sent to A&E, which is not ideal, to say the least.
The GP practice has declined to comment.
Kent Online reports.
Controversial plans to replace the windows of a tower block in Margate have been rejected. Some people living in Arlington House have complained about the draft they let in, but campaigners say changing them would damage the building's appearance. Artist Tracy Emin is among those welcoming the decision and says the problem can be solved in other ways. Meantime, bosses at Dreamland in Margate, which is right next door to Arlington House, say they're committed to reopening their Grade 2 listed cinema. It closed in 2007 and was recently repurposed as the backdrop for Olivia Colman's movie Empire of Light. The site could be used for a major Bollywood film next year, but we're told there is a plan to reopen the building properly at some point. The oldest shop on Hythe High Street is set to reopen 18 months after the roof collapsed. £250,000 worth of stock was lost when an undetected water leak caused damage at Eldridge's last year. The store dates back to 1741, and the owners say they're proud to be reopening next weekend. Now, if you head to Kent Online or follow us on socials, you can see pictures of an ominous message that's been left on a smashed up pedestrian crossing in Tunbridge. Vandals destroyed the equipment in Cage Green and wrote, "You know what you did in 2012," on what was left behind. Well, Councillor Mark Hood represents Tunbridge at Kent County Council. He's been speaking to Bartholomew from our colleagues at KMTV.
This has been going on for quite a long time. Since September 2021, we've been dealing with regular damage to the control panels at the crossing. Yeah, it's just, it's mindless, because whoever's doing this, they've obviously got a grudge against somebody, but they're taking it out on the community. So we've got a huge amount of school children who use the crossing every day. Lots of elderly people live here as well who want to use the crossing to access York Parade shops. So it's placing them in huge danger. It's got to the stage where the cost is meaning that officers at the County Council are reviewing exactly how we go forward and whether or not to downgrade the crossing and take the panels away. So that's going to be make it a much less safe option.
And of course, it's got that message on it. You said that this has happened before. Has a message appeared on any of these smashed crossings before? And do you have any idea of what it might mean?
Yeah, I've only been a councillor for the County Council since 2021. So this goes way beyond any recollection that I might have. I don't know if this is somebody's fantasy or whether there is anything behind it. But we've got email addresses. If someone's got a problem with the council, if they've got a long seated issue that they think that we should be addressing as their councillors, get in touch with myself or Paul Steptoe. We're elected to represent all of our residents. So why go to these extremes? It's much easier to get on your computer, on your laptop, send us an email rather than cut out pieces of lettering and stick them to a destroyed panel. It's beyond belief.
Yeah, it just seems like somebody trying to I don't know, make a name for themselves or just get someone's attention in obviously the wrong way. So what is the kind of next step with the pedestrian crossing then? I know there's potentially talks about long-term solutions, but right now is it just been covered up? Are people just having to sort of be careful when they cross the road and look both ways?
That's exactly what's happened. In the past, we've replaced the panels as soon as we can. They cost about £3,500 to replace each time. So this cost is really adding up. And if it continues, when do we draw the line? So it's difficult. So they're going to remain bagged up until we're talking to the cabinet member at Kent County Council. We're talking to Kent Police. We're talking to Tunbridge and Morling Council about this as well. And yeah, together we're hoping we can find some kind of a resolution to this. But we want people to come forward. If you've got any idea what this is about, who's responsible, please contact Kent Police and call 101.
Kent Online reports.
Let's head to the Commons next, where the MP for Tunbridge Wells has spoken out about issues with school buses in the area. Lib Dem rep Mike Martin says children are having difficulty getting to the Skinners Kent Academy.
In my constituency of Tunbridge Wells, a group of parents have told me about the difficulties that their children have getting to Skinners Kent Academy. You can either get the number 2 or the number 297, and the first one gets the children to school 90 minutes early, where they have to wait by the side of a busy road in the cold and the dark, and the latter gets them there 50 minutes late. Over a school year, that is 50 hours of education. So Kent was given £23 million. Beyond giving the money, what will the Department of Transport be doing to ensure that this money increases the frequency of services so that children can actually get to school on time?
This is a response from Transport Minister Mike Kane.
As the Honourable Member has pointed out, Kent County Council has been given £23.1 million as part of our £1 billion packages for buses. We're righting a lot of wrongs over the underfunding of particularly rural services over the years, and we expect to see a much better bus service across our whole country going forward in the future.
The Christmas light switch on in Folkestone has been cancelled because of safety concerns. It was due to take place in Guildhall Street tomorrow evening, but organisers are worried about strong winds and rain from Storm Bert. Well, in fact, a weather warning for wind has been issued for Kent. Coastal areas are most likely to be impacted, with gusts predicted of up to 70 miles per hour. The yellow alert's in force from 3 p.m. tomorrow until 9 on Sunday night. Now, an event is being held in Kent this weekend to highlight the impact of smartphones on children. Whitstable Unplugged will include talks from experts and from a young person who will share how the technology has shaped their lives. Amy Lawrence is one of the organisers.
We really wanted to start a positive conversation about smartphones and social media in childhood. We believe there's a better way for children to live alongside technology, and we need to support and respect each other's decisions about how and when and whether we integrate smartphones into our lives. So the idea of the weekend is we're inviting parents and community members to join us on Saturday, this Saturday, at the Horsebridge Centre at 1 p.m. And there we're going to be discussing the impact of smartphones on children and how we can live together with smartphones. We have a range of different experts. So we have psychologists, we've got teachers, we have top line results from the Kent Police and Crime Commissioner Survey 2024. And we also have a young person who's grown up with smartphones to talk about their experiences of living with smartphones, the first generations who live with them.
Is it something that amongst the community you think has gained more traction? People are more aware of the impact of smartphones and particularly social media and the influence that can have, particularly on young people. Is it something that lots of parents are starting to talk about?
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly that was inspired by the national smartphone free childhood campaign. And the idea is that then you set up your local community of parents who can also inspire and educate each other. I think that parents until now have also always felt compelled to buy a smartphone because they didn't want their children to be, you know, the only one without, almost this FOMO feeling that people have. But actually, we want people to realise that there is another way. And actually, if you don't want your child to have a smartphone, there are other parents who feel the same, and there will be other children who don't have that.
It'll also include a performance of a play called Generation FOMO, which has been written using the real-life accounts of the impacts of smartphones. Playwright Isabel Defoe created it.
The interviews in particular with the young people were quite shocking, were quite surprising. You know, they are the ones that are speaking about FOMO, for example. They are the ones that put the word addiction on the table. They are the ones who want our support as parents, as educators, as caregivers. They want our support. They don't quite know how to put the phone down, but they want to do other things. Most kids, in fact, all of them, I asked them all, you know, if they were head of school for the day, if they, you know, would they remove the school ban, for example, the phone ban? And all of them said, no, they wouldn't. It's that one moment of respite that they have in the day. They love the ban. And it was really clear to me that they really want our support. So having campaigns like Smartphone Free Childhood Campaign, Whitstable Unplugged, having all of this is amazing because they want that conversation to be opened out. And I think that that's why I wrote the play, was also in a way to have it's not for them, because they know the story. It's for them to share it with their parents, with their teachers, with their head teachers, and for a dialogue to start.
This is all taking place at the Horsebridge Arts Centre from 1 p.m. tomorrow.
Kent Online News.
We're going to cover some environment stories now. Firstly, major plans have been announced to restore 80 hectares of chalk grassland near Dover Castle. English Heritage have teamed up with three local groups to support the scheme, which aims to create habitats for rare plants, birds and insects. Kate has been speaking to Ian Rickards from the Kent Wildlife Trust.
This is a nice big joint project with English Heritage. So English Heritage look after Dover Castle, and then less known, that look after the Western Heights, which is another big historic feature on the other side of Dover. So Kent Wildlife Trust are working with them and with the White Cliffs Countryside Partnership and with the Western Heights Preservation Society as well, to try and looking at restoration of the ground around the castles, around this the historic monument. So it's kind of always the historic monuments are the things you look at, but surround them, there's amazing habitats of chalk grass and scrub and woodland and these sorts of things. And that's what this project is about, is trying to get that nature back into those spaces, bringing nature back into these historical landscapes.
And why does the work need undertaking? Is it the vegetation dying off? Is it being affected by climate change? Why do we need to undertake the work?
It's the case of most of these sorts of things where nature gets taken for granted to some extent, and it kind of, it looks after itself, and that really isn't the case at all. It needs caring for. It needs not necessarily nurturing, but all our wild landscapes and things have got some input into them, either from grazing animals or from sort of physical additions from people and those sorts of things. Without that, lots of the areas where you might have sort of butterfly species and orchids and those sorts of things would disappear under bramble and under scrub and things. So what we're going to be doing, working with our partners, is to try and make sure we've got systems in place that these grass and places are protected and looked after and can thrive as well.
And so what sort of work will be involved? What will we be doing to preserve the area?
So a big part of it is getting grazing back into these areas. So it's looking at fencing, getting new animals that can cope with we're talking about pretty much vertical slopes that these things are animals are going to have to work up and down to graze and look after. There'll be some work with machines and contractors and volunteers to do scrub clearance and to sort of clear areas which are sort of disappearing under vegetation. Another big part of the project as well is engagement with local people as well. So drawing people from the town itself, getting them involved, knowing what we're doing, getting them up onto these spaces so that they can appreciate what's there as well.
And can you tell me a little bit about the sort of rare plants and species and things like that that do live in the area?
Yeah, well, chalk grass is a real rarity. Because there's not many places in the world really where you have that chalk exposed to the surface with just very thin layers of soil over the top. And the White Cliffs of Dover are a real sort of landmark in the world really. And that chalk then runs all through that whole area there. And that very thin soil with that chalk on top of it creates really quite unique conditions for things to grow. It's a really tough environment, but it means that orchid species like things like late spider orchid and autumn lady's tresses and these wonderful named plants, they can cope with these tough conditions. They'll be living on these chalk grass and slopes, and along with those there'll be the butterfly species, things like Adonis blue and Chalkhill blue, and they'll be living on particular plants that again can only really grow in these chalk grasses. And so it's a real community, a real ecosystem, and that then allows more exciting species or more obvious species like our red-billed chough, which you've just reintroduced onto the Dover cliffs. And they're the species that really benefit from this open chalk grass as well, because they can hunt for invertebrates. They like the open space. The grazing animals produce the dung, which produces more dung beetles for them to eat. And the whole thing just creates this whole system.
Work's expected to take 2 years, and it's being paid for by the National Lottery Heritage Fund. Elsewhere, a new report's revealed the kind of threats Kent could face by 2080 if climate change continues. Public health bosses say hotter weather and increased rainfall could lead to crop failures, putting up the price of food. Concerns have also been raised about flooding, air pollution, and the potential risk of illnesses like malaria and dengue fever. And finally, Chris Packham's been telling Kent Online about visiting Antarctica to photograph penguins, describing it as utterly overwhelming. The TV wildlife expert was there to raise awareness of the threats they face, including overfishing and climate change. Well, his pictures are going on display at Taylor Jones and Son Gallery in Deal from this weekend, and I've been speaking to Chris all about his trip.
I like Kent very much. I would normally be visiting nature reserves in pursuit of orchids, birds, butterflies and all of the riches that Kent holds, but this time we'll be in a gallery. Richard has very kindly put on an exhibition of some of my photographs, namely those that I took of penguins, so mainly from Antarctica and the Falkland Isles. I'm very much looking forward to it. I haven't done a photo exhibition for about, 25 years or something like that. I mean, I've got to say, and I probably shouldn't, because, I'm not a great fan of my own work. I very much enjoy looking at other people's photography and art, but not my own. But thankfully, Richard seems to be a fan of my work, and hopefully a few others who turn up will be too.
I've had a look at some of the pictures. They are absolutely spectacular, and I personally love penguins. They are my favourite things in the whole world. Why do you love them so much?
Well, I mean, firstly, it was an extraordinary opportunity to go to Antarctica. It was somewhere that I never dreamt that I'd be able to visit as a kid, as a child. So that was the first thing. And then when I take photographs, I have to work to a project. I'm not one of those people that picks up the camera, goes for a wander about to see what they find. So I think about, what I'm going to do in advance. I have plans, I visualize pictures and techniques that I'm going to use. I research all of those things. So knowing that I was going there and knowing that when on land, penguins are relatively static, they can't fly away. And I'd heard that they were very tame, so that you can't approach them, but they are allowed to approach you. That's the sort of part and parcel of the regulations of visiting that part of the world. They're very statuesque, they're very svelte, they're very simple in their colouring, they're not too flamboyant. I'm not a kingfisher bloke, I'm an avocet sort of bloke. I like simple shapes and colours. And there were large numbers. I mean, one of the colonies that we went to, king penguins, 160,000 pairs. So from a photographic point of view, statuesque, abundant, accessible due to their tameness, and the fact they can't fly away when they're on land, all of those seems thing to add up. Then you add in where they live and this extraordinary backdrop of mountains, stormy seas, or ice. They seem the perfect subject. So yes, and then outside of that, as you say, they've got fascinating ecology, behavior, physiology, so on and so forth. So penguins were a big win. And then I suppose lastly, I can tag on top that everyone has been taught to pick up a penguin, and they are very much part of our culture. We had March of the Penguins, we've had penguin animations, we've had biscuits. They're a very popular group of birds.
Yeah, because most of us would probably think of Happy Feet, or if we've seen them in a wildlife park or a zoo. What was it like actually seeing them though in their natural habitat? That must have been magical.
Well, I mean, the first time it's sort of befuddling. It's so breathtaking that it's befuddling. And I knew that that's what was going to happen. Again, that's why I need to go with a photographic plan. Because when you travel from one end of the world to the other, you get off a small boat onto a beach and there are 160,000 pairs. That's nearly like 500,000 penguins on a beach. All, sort of waddling, squawking, pooing, and braying, and it's overwhelming. It's completely and utterly overwhelming, and you can't prepare for that sort of thing. I tried. I mean, I did think, right, I'm not just going to rush around photographing every penguin I see in any particular in no particular style or with mission at hand. So I did. That's why I say I did. That's why I did go with plans. But yeah, difficult to be quite honest with you. It's one of those things that, I remember getting back on the boat the first time and sort of thinking, did that really happen? It was just mind-boggling, absolutely mind-boggling, So yeah, overwhelming. And I think one of the reasons for that is just the sheer abundance of those birds in that place. We don't see that in the UK anymore. Our great grandparents would have seen, swarms of butterflies and vast flocks of birds, but we don't have that abundance in our lives anymore. So when we get it, it's pretty special.
And of course, that in itself is very concerning. And even though you mentioned there the vast numbers, I mean their habitat is at risk, and their numbers are at risk as well. Did that kind of come across, or was it just there were so many birds to take in? I mean, was it hard to think that they're threatened at all?
No, that's always been part and parcel of the mission. Part of the reason we were visiting was fundraising and awareness. Obviously, in some parts of the world, that part of the world, sorry, there's overfishing for their food, and we've seen penguin colonies declining on the Antarctic Peninsula on some of the islands because basically too much krill is being extracted. Krill are small crustaceans that live in the sea, not microscopic. They can be centimeters long, but they're turned into fish oils. Many of the fish oils that people who take supplements will be having those in krill, and they're in all sorts of other things. But they're essentially being overfished, there's a measured impact. Then, of course, we've got climate breakdown impacting Antarctica. We've got melting ice sheets that's imperiling some of the species that nest on the ice. Warmer waters changing the distribution of where fish are breeding and therefore access to their food. So, no, look, there's no corner of our planet at the moment that isn't imperiled by some some aspect of climate breakdown or biodiversity loss, and that was very much part and parcel of our mission, as it were. And you know, it's one of those things, isn't it, where it's the other end of the world, so you think, I can't possibly have any impact there, either positive or negative. It can't be my fault that they're declining. I'm not playing a role in that, even if it's a passive one and indirect. And the other thing is, there's nothing I can do to help. It's so far away, it's out of my control. Well, yeah, that's not the case, is it? As I've just explained, when we go into our health food shops to choose our supplements, we are, you know, indirectly impacting on those birds in some instances. So we've got to consider these days that it is a small planet and there's an awful lot of us, and our influence does spread far more widely than we imagine it might.
Thanks so much to Chris for chatting to us. And the gallery is on the High Street in Deal if you are planning to head along. And now with a roundup of everything else going on in Kent this weekend, here's Sam Laurie.
I think I mentioned last week that some of the county's top attractions are starting to launch their festive experiences. And this weekend, we've got some seriously big hitters who are helping Kent locals get into the Christmas spirit. Let's start with Leeds Castle, which is bringing not one but two family experiences to its grounds this weekend. The castle, just outside of Maidstone, kicks things off tonight with its spectacular light trail. It's organised by the same team who create the Bedgebury Light Trail, which opened last weekend, and it will see incredible projections and art installations illuminating the grounds. Then, from Saturday, Leeds Castle will also open up its Nutcracker Christmas attraction, which takes visitors on a journey through the tale of the Nutcracker, with storytelling, decorations and interactive performances. From one castle to another, now it's time to turn our attention to Hever Castle, near Edenbridge, which is celebrating 10 years of festive fun. To mark the anniversary, the castle will be giving a nod to some of its previous Christmas themes, with characters like Peter Pan, Tinkerbell, the Queen of Hearts and the White Rabbit. There are also stunning traditional decorations inside the castle, a children's fun fair, food and drink stalls, and an after dark light trail all open to the public from today. And to top off our list of light trails opening this weekend, Tunbridge Castle is bringing back Illuminate, a 45-minute walk around the castle grounds with colourful lights, lasers and projections. It opens on Sunday and it's part of the castle's free Christmas event, which includes a market and an alpine bar. If you live in or around Medway, you'll want to make the trip to the historic dockyard in Chatham, where you'll find Mission Christmas, a family favourite that returns to the maritime attraction for the third year. Kids will be taken to Santa's top secret underground hideaway and help the elves build toys and wrap gifts just in time for Christmas. It's a great immersive experience for the little ones. We reviewed it for the past 2 years, so if you want to get a flavour of the event, then you can read our previous reviews online. And if you're looking for something to do on a budget this weekend, don't worry, we've got a couple of freebies that the whole family can enjoy. Meet Father Christmas, browse local gift stalls and watch the town's light switch on at the Tenterden Christmas Market, which is open from today until Sunday, or watch the incredible Carnival of the Baubles, a light procession taking to the streets of Ashford on Saturday. Both are completely free. And finally, Panto season is well and truly here, and Kent's season of the Christmas shows starts today with the Marlowe Theatre's Beauty and the Beast. This year's Canterbury Panto stars former EastEnders actress Maisie Smith, CBeebies favourite Phil Gallagher, and the Marlowe's resident dame Ben Roddy. If you want to book tickets to catch a panto this Christmas but aren't sure where to start, we've got you covered with our bumper panto guide up on What's On and Kent Online. Right, I think that's enough festive cheer for 1 week, but don't worry, I'll be back next week with plenty more Christmas goodies.
Kent Online Sports.
Football and Gillingham are back in League Two action this weekend after a 10-day break. They're welcoming Harrogate Town to Priestfield. Here's manager Mark Bonner.
They're in a similar sort of run as ourselves. They played Blackpool in a cup game, played very well. And they've had a couple of good results in trophy or cup competitions where they've certainly played well and had a brilliant result last week against Chesterfield. So that's a big, big result. We know how good a team Chesterfield are. So whilst they will be probably dissatisfied with the position they've found themselves and the run of form that they've had, games have been very close that they've played in, quite low scoring games, and the recent games and a return of a few of their more athletic players has given them a slightly different dimension. So you can definitely expect a hard running team that create you chances, and they play with an intensity and an edge which you know makes them a difficult opponent. At the same time as that, we've got to make sure we try to dominate the game and take the scruff of the neck. And we want to come out the winning team because it's really important for us that we stack a run of wins, ideally, but certainly unbeaten run together over this next period. We're a third of the season in the league. And from this game on, I think we play five in 28 days or something, and then 5 in 17. So it gets crazy. Now, this next period, we need to keep ticking away and stack some results together. And by the time we get to the second game in January, we'll be over halfway. And that will really start to shape out what the season's going to look like. So these games, the players have to recognise the importance of. We've got to play with the personality of a good side and the quality of a tough side. And I think the game will be really challenging. It looks like it's going to be absolutely chucking it down with buckets of rain and 45 mile an hour winds, which will bring its own challenges. And we have to make sure we stand up to all of them.
The Gills are currently 10th in the table. Kick-off tomorrow is at 3. You'll be able to follow the match action at Kent Online. Plus, we'll have details of the result and reaction to it in bulletins over on our sister radio station, KMFM, on Sunday morning. And council bosses in Swanley have denied selling land to rugby club Wasps to build a new stadium. They've been accused of changing their position after previously objecting to the plans. Wasps announced last week they've secured land for the project, but it's unclear exactly where the site is. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok and Threads. You can also get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And whilst you're on the site today, don't forget to check out the latest review from our secret drinker. Hope you have a fantastic weekend. We'll be back with the podcast on Monday.
News you can trust. This is the Kent Online Podcast.